Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To find out more about our upcoming shows or access to our more than 1,500 podcast episodes, visit our website at www.biteradio.me. Today, my special guest is Vicky Menendez, and we will be talking about her journey and new memoir, Crystal's Butterfly Effect, A Mother's Journey from Loss to Transformation, the mother of all memoirs. Vicky Menendez lost four of her five children, two of them 2 weeks apart. Crystal's Butterfly Effect is more than a story of loss. It's the story of what rises from it. In these pages, Vicky shares the sacred and soul-shaking journey of losing four of her five children, including two who passed just 12 days apart. She never imagined surviving something so unimaginable, let alone writing about it. But the signs kept coming, the whispers kept calling, and she knew this story wasn't just hers. It belonged to every heart that has ever broken open and wondered if they could begin again. Vicky's journey as a transformational coach was shaped by the profound loss and path to healing. After losing a stillborn child in 1980, her son in 2017, her father in 2018, and then a daughter and son just 12 days apart in 2023, she leaned on faith and the tools she cultivated over a lifetime to navigate the depths of grief. With more than 35 years in self-care, wellness, and design, she developed her mind, body, soul, and sacred spaces approach, an intentional path to healing that helps you move through life with resilience, inner harmony, and a renewed sense of purpose. For more information, you can visit Vicky's website, which is healwithvicky.com. And that's heal with Vicky is VICKIE.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Vicky to the show. Good day, Vicky.
Hello, Robert. Thank you for that beautiful introduction. That was amazing.
Excuse me. You're very welcome. And I'm really happy to have you here with me and sharing your story. I just can't imagine going through all of that such heartfelt loss. I mean, I've had guests on the show who have written about losing children, but it's usually one, maybe two, you know, but four is just amazing. So now your journey through the loss has shaped your purpose now. So can you share with the listeners maybe a defining moment when you realized your calling was to help people?
That came the day that I got the call from the police station trying to identify my son, who had a seizure in the pool. That was Jesse. He was 37, and he had epileptic seizures, and he was at the pool alone and had a seizure and drowned in the pool. So I'm in the middle of the grocery store. They call me to tell me to try to identify him, and all of a sudden this feeling came over me that something horrible had happened. And after the initial shock, it was surprising even to me that I turned to my faith and said, this is bigger than this. You know, like there's something for me to do in this world, and this is something that I signed up for. You know, I always believed in soul contracts, and I knew that I had to have signed up for something massive. You know, no one goes through what I've been through without a purpose being behind it, and that's what I really leaned on and leaned into, is that, okay, I'm ready, you know, I'm surrendering to you. And this is that's kind of where I started this journey of, I already knew that I wanted to write the book, but I thought I was writing it about my daughter, about the 48 days in the hospital, but I was when this happened with Jesse, I was so stunned and so shocked about it. It was like it took me a while to get started on the book because now everything changed. The story changed. And so it was, that was when I knew, though. And sometimes I shock myself as to how I've been able to get through the last few years and rise above what happened. I mean, this is something that I even had a hard time verbalizing. You know, when I had mm-hmm. to tell people what happened, they didn't know what to say. You know, what do you say to someone that has had such a profound loss? And so I think it's really beautiful when you look at it from another perspective, that we all walk through this journey together. My children and I had this contract for them to give me these experiences so that I could serve at a higher level.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, the soul contracts and the idea of pre-life agreements. You know, and I agree that is the case. And sometimes I find myself thinking, what were you thinking when you set this up? It can be very challenging, but it is those challenging moments bring forth the strength, you know, to be able to help others along the way.
Right. And, you know, I don't think we know. I think we agree to things, right? You know, like our contract is that we're going to experience profound loss in our life, right? But I don't think we know exactly what that's going to look like once we're earthside. So in my case, it was like, and I lost children in so many different ways, you know, a full-term stillborn, a child to an overdose. My daughter had severe asthma and went into cardiac arrest and was in an induced coma for 48 days. My son, you know, died of having a seizure and drowning in the pool. It's like, how many different ways could I go through this? And then when I lost my dad that day, I was on my way to pick my husband up because he felt like he was having a heart attack. I was taking him to the hospital when my sister called and said my dad was gone. And it was like, there's been like many, many shocking moments in my life, but I've risen above all of them, even surprising myself. But leaning on all of the things that I've learned throughout my life, that was really, in my opinion, that was God giving me a passion to learn all of the things that was going to keep me safe, you know, to learn how to take care of myself, how to listen to my body, how to do all of these things that would keep my nervous system under control. So I think everything happens in a divine order, and are we ready to listen to our bodies and to listen to those or see those synchronicities and follow that path that is just ultimately right there for us to walk, walk this beautiful path to a destination that we don't even know at the time.
Yeah, that is very true. And the idea of, you know, the pre-life agreements or soul contracts, how that perspective has helped you navigate the grief.
You know, I think that was everything. The one book that I read back when after Jesse or Wesley passed of the overdose and then my dad, that's when I decided I couldn't carry any more weight. You know, I felt so heavy. And because with everything that we experience, it's like picking up another 5-pound bag of flour and carrying it around. It's like you just feel the weight and you feel heavier and heavier. You see it in your face. You feel it in your body, you know, through aches and pains, and people think that it's arthritis. And sometimes I really think it's emotions. But I read a book called Radical Forgiveness by Colin Tipping. Mm-hmm. And that book changed everything for me. And it took me a while to get through it. Some of the chapters I had to read more than once because it was like, what did he say? You know, but some of the analogies he used, some of the stories that he used, it's like it really resonated with me. And it's like, you know, if we did have this agreement, that just means that my kids met their contract, no matter what that meant for them. You know, we had this sacred contract together, and we've all followed through with it, and that's the reason why I'm still not done with mine, and I need to step into what I'm supposed to do. But over the last 2 years, I thought their contract was to bring me to this point, but I realized as everything has unfolded that they're still walking with me. I still have things that they want to tell, their stories that are going to be spoken through me, and messages like, you know, for addicts and parents of addicts. My son left me an amazing piece of art. He was an artist that could speak to the world. And I wrote an article for him that I wanted published because I wanted his art to be seen. And when I started reading it back to myself, I felt my son come through, and I just started crying, and he's like, "Mom, we're still not done." You know, he brought me to healing, which if he hadn't have brought me to the point where I felt like I needed a coach and needed somebody to guide me through that, there's no way I would have gotten through losing two children in 12 days. There's no way. And because I had all of the self, you know, like Tony Robbins for 30 years and all of that self-development, but what they didn't teach me was how to process emotions and how to embrace what happened. You know, not to push it away or to store it in my body, but how to meet up with it, how to be in the shadows, you know, to do some shadow work, to really just be with it and be okay with being with the pain, you know, because a lot of people don't want to feel it. They want to run from it. And I found the best way to deal with it was to acknowledge it, to embrace it, to love it, and know that, you know, that this is a part of my journey.
Yeah. You mentioned radical forgiveness, and I've come across that phrase a couple times over the years. So what, in your opinion, what makes for radical forgiveness, and maybe what do you think some of the misconceptions people may have about forgiveness in general?
Oh, that's a good one, because, you know, especially when things really horrible happen, like a rape or something like that, it's like, how, you know, how can you forgive something like that? We have no idea what that person had been through in their lifetime, what drove them to be the way that they are, but we're not really forgiving them. We're relieving that from our body. You know, we're releasing that anger and judgment and all of that stuff from us, from so that we're not carrying it around. Because it was one thing that I read that really resonated. It wasn't from that book, or maybe it was, but it was like taking poison and hoping the other person dies. Because when we hold on to all of that anger, all of that judgment, and it's making us sick, it doesn't affect them at all.
Yeah.
And by relieving that, by having that forgiveness, it's not like you're condoning what they do. You're just releasing and surrendering to it so that you're not carrying that around anymore. Because it is that hate and that anger toward that person that could affect you, that could affect your health and affect your life. And the way you interact with everybody around you, if you're carrying around that anger, then that is what is going to emanate from you, you know? Like, we are broadcasting our frequency every second. And what do we want that to be?
Yeah, that's so true. And, you know, what you said, the idea of forgiveness doesn't condone or give acceptance to, you know, that bad behavior, that it's simply releasing yourself from that connection, that very toxic kinds of connections that the lack of forgiveness brings forth.
Yes, absolutely. And especially when it comes to a loss, like someone did something to someone that you love and you actually lost them over it, then that those emotions that you carry for that other person put you in a really low frequency. You know, your vibration is so low that brings in a negative polarity to your body. And I found that by trying to return to joy and trying to return, or not trying, I think I actually did it and succeeded at that. But when I raised my frequency and vibration, I felt my kids more. I felt like they were connecting to me and they were giving me messages. They were guiding me along this path the whole way. I felt so protected by them.
It certainly does create an openness, you know, removes blocks that may have prevented that connection from happening.
Absolutely, because think about it. They are vibrating at such a high frequency. I mean, they are, all they are is pure essence. They're love. There's no judgment. There's no anger, fear, or any of that stuff exists in them anymore. They are pure love. So in order for us to meet up with them, we have to try to get back up there too. And I find that when I'm feeling my best, because not every day is like I'm just, you know, gloriously happy. You know, I have days when I'm really low and nobody likes feeling like that. But if you just take a second to stop and say, okay, this is where I am. Let me embrace this. Let me be in this, not live in it.
Right.
Just process it, move through it, embrace it, love on it, just appreciate where you are right then. Then it lifts. But when you don't allow yourself to go through that process, then you kind of stay in it and you can't get to that higher level, and you can't get back there because it's hard. It's my son's birthday, you know, and wow, you know, that's a tough day for me because I miss him. You know, it's not like that all these new perspectives takes away all of the pain, but I found that, you know, by trying to live at a higher frequency, I can meet up with them on a much different level and feel just so much more connected to them.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned earlier about self-care and, you know, even during those periods when you're talking about where you kind of need to maybe just be with the feelings that are happening right then, why do you think that people maybe have difficulty with the idea of self-care and actually making it a priority in their life?
I think women especially have a really hard time with putting themselves first because they think it's selfish, or, you know, their kids come first. Everything comes first, you know, but not them. But, you know, you can't give from an empty cup. And I found that by treating myself with more love and knowing that, you know, these are things that I need in order to be able to give more love. It's not like you're stopping what you're doing. You're not like just telling everybody else no. You're just giving yourself a chance to be just a better energetic flow with your ebb and flow of your life. And then it creates this ripple effect that is absolutely beautiful, because when, you know, they say happy wife, happy life, and there's a lot to that, because, you know, if the mother is just emanating this joy because they actually feel good inside, then that ripples around everybody in their life. And then those people are happier, and they create a ripple effect. And before you know it, you know, we could heal the world if we could all concentrate on what we need and really being diligent about making sure that we're good.
Yeah.
That we are okay, and making that a priority, you know, because if you don't make it a priority, nobody else is going to.
Yeah, it's like on the airplane, you know, put your mask on first, you know, before you, you know, help someone else beside you.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, in your work, you use a variety of modalities, breath work, meditation, rituals, and movement. So tell us about the variety that you use, and are there particular modalities that are more or less helpful, you know, to some people? I mean, do you, I guess, customize, maybe the word I'm thinking of, the approaches when working with individuals?
Well, I think it's really important to find out what resonates with people, because what resonates for me may not rock somebody else's boat. You know, they may not be as interested in doing yoga as they are doing breath work or just going out and taking a walk in nature. You know, sometimes just staying locked up in your house can be enough to get you depressed. You know, just walking out and being in nature, putting your feet on the ground and taking those sneakers off, because, you know, we're all used to wearing those rubber sole shoes and we're not coming in contact with the earth anymore. And that there's that energetic flow between the earth and our bodies. But for me, when I was going through like the depths of my grieving process after the two kids especially, I found for me, I did a yin yoga routine twice a day. For about a month, I did it twice a day, and it kind of waned a little bit after that because I got so much out of it during that time. It made such a difference in my life. And I found that with yin yoga, you have poses that you hold the poses longer. It's not like hot yoga or most other yogas. It's like you do maybe less poses, but you're holding the positions longer. And the particular poses actually is a heart opener. And it was then I would do it in the morning and before I went to bed. And I look forward to those times of me being alone in that, where I could really get in touch with my emotions and release it in a really gentle and beautiful way. And then I could leave more room to find that joy at other times of the day. So, I had that I did in the morning and the evening, I had that to look forward to every day. And I knew that when I was in that, because it was only about a half an hour, but in that half an hour, I could be with my emotions, myself, without somebody patting me on the back and saying, oh, I'm so sorry, you'll be okay. And, you know, sometimes you don't want to hear that. You know, you just want to kind of be with the emotion. And doing the yin yoga, and especially this one particular routine that I found, was so amazing for me. And then breath work, you know, we store emotions in our body and they get lodged in our tissues and our organs. And certain types of trauma, like sexual trauma, tends to be held in the hip area and that kind of thing. And breath work helps to kind of get those emotions to surface and to get them out so that you can meet up with them and process those emotions. And it's, you know, breath work is so good for you in so many other ways, like on a cellular level. So as you get healthier, you're able to process emotions so much easier. Because think about it, if you're sick, you're sick in bed with the flu, you can't do anything. Like the thought of having to do anything is just beyond, you know, I mean, you don't feel good. So when you're ill, when you're feeling really low and your energy is low and your frequency and vibration is low, then it's really, really hard to be with any emotion because you're just not equipped. Your body is not equipped. Your nervous system is not equipped to handle it.
Yeah. And kind of along that line, you emphasize the connection between meridians, chakras, and the vagus nerve. So, you know, you're kind of talking a little bit about that energy environment, I guess, you know, personal energy environment. So can you talk a little bit about the connection between meridians and chakras and how it supports the healing process?
Absolutely. The chakra system is like, you could imagine you have like seven major chakras, you know, your crown chakra, the third eye, where it's where, you know, you get all of your intuition, your throat chakra, you know, people that have been silenced, you know, whether it be by over-domineering father or husband or, you know, friend or whatever, and that throat chakra closes down and they can't speak their truth. The heart chakra, the sacral chakra, the solar plexus, and the root chakra, all of those work in synergy with each other. And when you have, and sometimes the throat chakra can be shut down and the rest of the chakras are working fine. So there's all kinds of things you can do, like Reiki and humming, like chanting and that kind of thing can help to, and there's even chakra meditations where you can visualize those chakras starting to spin again at the perfect speed, because you can think of it as like a little ball that's spinning, and but it's spinning just at the perfect rate, just perfect for your body, you know, for what you need. So that connects with the meridians. And like Qigong is one of my favorite exercises, because it can help to unblock meridians. And then the vagus nerve it really regulates your nervous system. And there's so many different ways we can activate that, through breath work, through singing, through humming, through taking like a cold shower. Like you end your shower with a cold shower, that activates your vagus nerve. And there's many other ways to do it. And if we just did the energy work alone, we would find that we could really meet up with just about anything if we have the proper tools, if we know how to process that emotion. I don't think there's much of anything at this point in my life that I can't face.
Yeah.
And but I had to learn that, you know, I had to have, I had a lot of tools in my toolbox, and I thought just the self-care and all of that was enough. But when I learned, I've been certified in breath work, and another thing that I'm certified in is MAP. And that is short for Make Anything Possible. And what you do is you are connecting to your client's superconscious mind, not even their subconscious mind, but their innate intelligence. The innate intelligence that knows everything about you, every experience you've had, even in past lifetimes or parallel lifetimes. You can connect the dots. Some people don't realize that the trigger that they have at this moment, it's not about that moment. It's about something that happened when you were five. And when you're in the middle of this protocol, helps them to find it on their own. It's not like you're sitting, you know, they're sitting on a couch and you're doing talk therapy and you're telling them, you know, what they need to hear. They're actually unearthing all of that on their own through the process that you take them through. And you're asking the superconscious, after you get the approval, you know, you ask the client and the superconscious for approval to go in and do the work. And throughout the process, it's kind of like a script, and you're asking the superconscious mind to process certain things. And we have certain parts that we create throughout our lives to help to keep us safe. You know, like we have a trauma and we create a part. We've got all kinds of parts working within us all the time that help to keep us safe from the things that happen to us. So we have to ask all of those parts to come forward. You know, it's like this whole process. It's very interesting. And it's very, very, it works so well. And there's only like 300 and I think the last I saw, there's 326 people in the entire world that has certification to use this protocol, and I'm one of them. I'm so proud to be one of them.
Yeah, you know, that really helps people get to the source of, you know, of the triggers, and so it reshapes responses as a result.
Yep. There was a book that I read like many years ago, about 30 years ago. I was going through my divorce, and I picked up this book called from Gary Smalley. Oh, and now I'm totally blank on the name of it, but it was a really short book, and it was like, it's what you're experiencing right now is only 10%. 90% of it is things that have led up to this moment that triggered you, you know. So it's like all of these past experiences that we don't realize are shaping every decision we make, every interaction that we have with people. And if we can go back and really go through and process those things, it can enrich our relationships so much more, because we don't realize how much all of those other experiences are shaping how we interact on a daily basis.
Yeah, I know. It is amazing when you think about, we have so many subconscious kinds of decision-making that goes on. Like, you know, you don't want to have to be reminded to breathe, you know. You want,
right.
You know, so, I mean, you know, those things, are, you know, but there's a lot of things that have been relegated to the unconscious or subconscious that could use a bit of fine-tuning or maybe re-educating, you know.
Yeah.
Now, you talked about, you know, personal energy, and your work also includes energy beyond the person, you know, the environment, the home. Can you maybe share with us, you know, what are some signs that people can look at to get a better understanding that their environment is affecting their well-being?
Right. Yeah, that is so important. And I think it's this invisible thing that people don't realize it's there, but they don't realize it's there. And because if you have this huge party and you've got 100 people in your house, when you leave, there are energies that are left behind. And sometimes they're good energies, but sometimes there can be negative energies that are kind of lingering in your space. And, you know, you can tell, like, if people aren't as harmonious with each other, that there's got to be something that needs to be some energy in the house, stagnant energy or negative energy that needs to be dispelled. And it's so easy to do that. You can do it with white sage. There's some, you know, I actually brought someone into my house to just do a whole assessment of my entire house, because especially if you live in an older home and a lot of people have lived there, there's so much energy that can be left behind by people that formerly lived there. So it's really a good idea to do that on a fairly regular basis, or whenever you feel that things just don't feel right. Because, you know, you can go and have this wonderful massage, you're feeling wonderful, and you walk in your house and good feeling gone. You know, it just, you walk into your house and it just doesn't feel as harmonious. You know, you go into place of business or into someone's home, and you're either like ready to pitch a tent and stay with them forever, mm-hmm. or you can't wait to get out of there, right? So there's, you feel that energy, and other people probably feel it more than you do because they don't live there, you know. But when you're living in it, sometimes you have to look at what's going on around me to get that indication that, okay, it's time for me to pull out the white sage and the Palo Santo to, you know, have the Florida water or whatever you use to kind of clear and cleanse the air. And you can even do the white sage with the people that live there, because, you know, energetically, energy is like a magnet. You're in a room and you really are taking on other people's energy, especially if you're an empath or something. So sometimes we can leave a place and we're not only carrying our energy, but we're carrying around 20 other people's energy at the same time. So doing that regular cleansing on ourselves, I think is really important too. But in the space in where you live, that is super important too.
Yeah, I agree. Now, you created a group, Learning to Live Again. So tell us about its origin and, you know, what makes this group different from others?
Just recently, I've been trying to, like, pull more people into the group. And so I started kind of studying some of the other groups that are out there on Facebook. And I found that there was one particular group that was all about people losing their children, or it was about loss and grief. And there was like 25,000 people in there. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But everybody was still in deep mourning. And some of them had lost children or a loved one or something 20 years ago, and they're still deep in grief. And what I had hoped for Learning to Live Again is, how can we take every moment and live it intentionally? You know, do we look at washing dishes as this horrible thing? Oh, I have to wash dishes. Or could we step into it and make that an intentional moment where it's more sacred? You know, we can use that as a time where we just disconnect from everything. We listen to the dishes clanking and the water rustling, and that's when we think of our best ideas, when we don't mean to. You know, do we sweep instead of vacuum? And when we're folding clothes, we could use that as a gratitude session. Every time we pick up a little baby t-shirt or something, we can be grateful that they're in our lives instead of looking at it as a chore. So that's kind of what I like to teach, is to make those moments count and to make them sacred and to make everything mean something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just makes our day go so much better when we're looking at everything as a way to create something, rather than looking at it as, oh, this is a chore, I have to do this, it's a negative thing. Because if we've got to do it anyway, we might as well make it enjoyable, you know. And one time I was watching a video on YouTube, and it was Goldie Hawn, not that long ago, and she was washing dishes, putting the dishes away, drying the dishes, to this amazing music. She was dancing all over the kitchen. And so how do we look at the things that we do? You know, she was making it fun and energetic and joyful. And can we infuse that into our everyday life and everything that we do?
Yeah. Yeah, I knew a woman in her 80s who loved washing dishes. I mean, she would be standing at the kitchen window, and, you know, looking out over the, you know, there was a lot of road traffic that kind of went, you know, in front of the window. But it was like she was in bliss. I mean, you know, and, you know, enjoyed that time with herself. And so, you know, so washing dishes several times a day was not an issue with her.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like watering plants,
mm-hmm.
how could we look at that differently? You know, if we look at it as we're making something grow, we're keeping something alive, you know, and how can we create an analogy and make that connect to us in some way? You know, that by us doing that, then it's, I don't know, I think it speaks to us on a different level, you know, all the little things that we do in our home and outside, and how are we giving to the community? How are we connecting with people? You know, do they love seeing us walk in the room? You
mm-hmm.
know, do they see our aura around us when we walk in? They smile instead of saying, oh, here she is again, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's like, you know, we create everything in our life and we give meaning to everything. So I thought, you know, I could give this meaning behind all of this profound loss that I've had in my life, or I could make it beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's what I decided, because the other one, I just chose not to look at it that way. You know, I physically miss my children, of course.
Right.
But I'm looking at it and feeling it on a totally different level. You know, they're, wow, the work that they're doing right now is beyond anything we can even fathom.
Yeah. And, you know, quite frankly, they would want you to continue living your life to its fullest until it's time to join them again.
Yeah. Oh, I've got a little story about that. A friend of my son's, he used to live in California, and he came back here to Miami, and that was a gift because I hadn't really seen him in a long time, like, you know, like on a regular basis, a daily basis. So for about 6 months before he passed, he was here in Miami, and his friend, we would stay in touch after after he passed, we would stay in touch, and he would go down to where Jesse would go to have his coffee. It was behind the house, and he would have his coffee there every morning. So his friend went down, and he would have his coffee there, and this little hummingbird would come and visit him. And if you think about it, you know, a lot of people talk about hummingbirds just like butterflies and birds are spirits, you know, that are coming to visit you. And he would come and fly around him every morning. And one day, we would just, like, get in touch with each other out of the blue. You know, we would just think of each other. And I reached out to him, and he was like, I was telling him that the book was in layout. And, you know, I was really excited about that. And he said, oh, now I know why Jesse was so, because he just called the bird Jesse. He said, I know why he was so excited this morning. He was just fluttering around me like something great was going on. And he said, now I know why. And I just loved that. I thought, oh, that just just touched my heart so much that he was still like thinking of him and feeling that connection with him on a totally different level. And that's what we could all do. We can have that connection with the people we lost, but we can't do it if we have our head in the sand. We have to raise up and try to meet them where they are. And that's way up there in the highest of frequencies.
Yeah, I agree. That's a wonderful story. Yeah. You know, in recognition that, you know, Jesse is helping, you know, other people as well, not just you.
Yeah.
So we're getting toward the end of the show, Vicki. I do want to ask, now there are many people who struggle with grief, but they just don't know where to begin. So do you have any maybe recommendations or where they can start?
I would tell anyone to join a group. You know, find a group that really resonates with you. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a grief group, but I would suggest something on spirituality because they're into feeling, you know, like they're into really acknowledging and honoring the emotions that you feel. But if you find a good grief group, then that's fine too. But find a group that you can really kind of connect with. And, you know, I have groups, but not everybody's going to resonate. You know, find one that really resonates with you. If you can afford one-on-one guidance, I never appreciated hiring a coach until I finally thought, I've got to do something. I cannot live like this anymore. Yeah. And, you know, I looked at a photograph of myself, and I was smiling, but I wasn't smiling. There was pain written all over me, and it's like, I can't do this. So I spent so much more than I have ever spent on any class or anything that I'd ever done, and got that one-on-one guidance, and it was the best thing that I ever did. And I have a coach now. You know, I'll never be without a coach, and it may not be the same coach, but it'll be the coach that I need for what I need at that time. But there is a lot of value in finding the right coach, though. You want to make sure that you do really connect and resonate with them. But having somebody to keep you accountable. Because, you know, when you first start going through that healing journey, it gets hard sometimes.
Yeah.
But I found a way to make it easier and more graceful. Because, like I was saying earlier, we give everything its meaning. So if we say, this is so hard, then it is going to be hard. If we say, you know what, I have found a graceful and easeful way to get through all of my emotions. And what do you think is going to happen when that emotion arises? You know it's going to be graceful, and you know it's going to be easy. Mm-hmm. And so I think we, you know, it begins and ends with us. And if we can just reframe our beliefs, because that is kind of a generational thing too. You know, we learn from our parents, grandparents, and can we kind of change some of the beliefs that we have around how we move through life? It could make it a lot easier on us. But I would say groups for sure. And you mm-hmm. can find free groups out there. The groups that I have on Sunday night is a free group, and that's all centered around self-care. Next week, we're doing essential oils. Last week, we did breath work. The week before that, we did a chakra alignment. So we do some type of form of modality that they learn while we're in the session. And so, and we decide on what we're going to do the next week before the end of the meeting. And it's a great time.
That's great. Now, before we close, there is a special part of your book that I don't think I've seen in any others that uses mandalas. So tell us about that. You know, why you included them, what it is, and why you included that in your book.
When I was right at the end of my manuscript, I sat on it for months and months. And I couldn't figure out why I couldn't move forward with it. And all of a sudden, my son, my artist, came through to me. And I was talking to somebody in a meeting one day, and all of a sudden it came to me, I need to put mandalas in my book as a form of therapy. Because, you know, people use mandalas and all forms of art in healing. And that's the way that I honored him. Is to put, you know, I put a mandala for every chapter. So when you go in, you read the chapter, or maybe you decide to color the mandala before you read the chapter. But when you do that, then you can revisit the book. And when you flip through the book, there's all that color there, and you're bringing the book to life. And I just thought that was a beautiful way to, but then there was another thing. I was in, Denver getting my certification, my first level breathwork certification, and I was working with another a colleague, and she looked at me and said, oh wow, something just came through for me for you. And I'm like, what? And she said, did you write letters to your children? And I said, yeah, I did. She said, they want you to put them in your book. So I put, you know, we already had the layout done, but I just couldn't get through the end of the layout to sign off on it, and that was why. As soon as I, you know, I had to put them at the end of the book because they had already laid out the book.
Right.
But as soon as that came through, it's like everything, all of the pieces fell into place. And it was just such a beautiful ending to the book to see all of the letters that I'd written to all of my children. And I also have an audible, too, in my voice.
Wow. That is great. You know, Vicki, this has really been a treat. I want to thank you for joining us and sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed this a lot. I didn't know what it would be like to be just on audible, but it's been really, really nice. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, great. Me, too. So, everyone, again, today my special guest has been Vicki Menendez, and we've been talking about her journey as well as her new memoir, Crystal Butterfly Effect, A Mother's Journey from Loss to Transformation, the mother of all memoirs. Again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is healwithvicki.com, and that's heal with Vicki is V-I-C-K-I-E.com. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.